I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
There's no doubt that the accidental discovery of penicillin almost 100 years ago changed the course of human history. At the very least, tens of millions of people over the last century have lived instead of died because of it. So it's a good thing. Despite what you may have heard, though, there is such a thing as too much of a good thing. Over the last 90 years, we've used penicillin and many other antibiotics for all sorts of infections, including infections that don't actually require antibiotics. And some of the rates of overprescription are shocking. And all that has created a term that you're likely familiar with, superbugs. It's a great term for an existential threat. It's scary, it's specific, and it is descriptive. But it doesn't actually capture the scope of the problem, nor the rate at which the threat is escalating. How far along the curve of antibiotic resistance are we? What happens if we start losing the evolutionary race to these bacteria? And what can we do on a macro level to solve what is actually a very micro level problem of doctors prescribing antibiotics to patients who feel like crap, even if those patients might not need it? Because that's the problem we have to solve. And just like bacteria, it's everywhere. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Dr. Kevin Schwartz is an infectious disease physician with Public Health Ontario. Hey, Dr. Schwartz.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. I guess, why don't you start by just explaining what you mean by the word superbug?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I won't intentionally try and terrify you more, but perhaps that'll be the outcome. And I think we use the term superbug often as more of a, I think, easily relatable term to people to get them a little bit nervous on purpose. I mean, I think the actual term is meant to imply a bacteria or other type of infection that has become resistant to our commonly used treatments, which would be antibiotics.
How does that happen?
So, I mean, that is a natural phenomenon that happens over time. So bacteria, like all organisms, are subject to natural selection and they evolve over time. And so the more that you try and kill them with antibiotics or other medications, they are going to try and evolve over time to survive. And that's basically what happens. And that's going to happen over time, almost regardless of what we do. But the more stimulus we give them, the more antibiotics we expose bacteria to in our environment, which is in our bodies or in the soil or in animals or anywhere, is they are going to develop more resistance to those antibacterial drugs.
So this has been happening then, in a sense, since we first started taking penicillin.
And well before that, actually. So I guess it's, you know, it's a naturally almost random process, right?
Right.
And that bacteria will develop resistance. But when you stimulate them, so Wes, once we introduced penicillin in the 50s and then the introduction of multiple new antibiotics over time, the bacteria are developing resistance at a faster and faster rate, making a lot of these treatments, effective and safe treatments, less effective. And then we need to go to usually more toxic or difficult medication.
That's what I'm trying to wrap my head around, is what is the process for fighting these things if their development is a naturally occurring phenomenon?
Yeah, so good. I mean, it's a good question. So while resistance to some degree is inevitable, we can certainly, if we use antibiotics less and more carefully, it'll be a much slower process and certainly won't be as important in a clinical medicine setting. And it's beyond just the infections that people have. So people think of like sore throats and ear infections and pneumonia. And it's true that some of those infections become harder to treat over time. But we also take for granted all the other medical advances over the last 50 years. Solid organ transplants, cancer chemotherapy, the fact that we can deliver a very premature baby and look after them and they can survive are all dependent on our ability to treat infections, which are the most common complications of all of these medical procedures. And if infections become untreatable or less treatable over time, we're really not going to be able to safely do many of these medical advances that we've achieved over the last half century.
You mentioned things have been accelerating recently. Do you have a sense, or does science have a sense of kind of the scale or what that curve looks like?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's accelerating to the point where there's a bit of a tipping point in that we're really starting to notice clinical effects on both patients and also on the economy and other things. It can be things like infections that used to be treatable, let's say, in the community with a very well-tolerated antibiotic are no longer. So it may be that people have failed an antibiotic treat and end up in hospital very sick. It might be that people are in hospital, but they develop an infection that has resistance. The bacteria already has resistance in it. And so you need to use much more toxic medications, or that can only be given intravenously, that take longer to cure, and that may not be able to cure the infection. And we know that more patients die from so-called superbugs or bacteria that are resistant than those that have infections with non-superbugs.
What do you think the general public misunderstands the most when we have conversations like this?
I mean, the common things that I come across are first of all, the general principle of resistance. I think people, and there's surveys that have been done by public health groups showing that people think resistance happens in the human, that you get take antibiotics and then you develop resistant to the infection, which is not the case. It's the bacteria that develop resistance, and these bacteria may either live in or on your body or on other people's bodies or in the environment that then you get infected with. So it's the bacteria that develops resistance. And I think it's an important distinction because one, it has implications for the treatment, but also the spread of these infections. Now, and so you getting antibiotics or, you know, your kids getting antibiotics unnecessarily impacts you and your grandparents and your other family members, because as we stimulate bacteria to develop resistance, then that can spread. That resistance gene or resistant bacteria spreads to other bacterial species on other people. And that's how this thing spreads to other people in society.
Have we, in just in general, I know I guess I'm asking you to make a general pronouncement, but have we in the past been too quick to prescribe antibiotics?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely, that's the case. And, you know, and I think there's some pretty reasonable explanations for it. I mean, antibiotics are a marvelous invention for most things in medicine. We do not cure things with a 7-day prescription, right? So it's very tempting, especially when the diagnosis is not certain, to prescribe antibiotics. I mean, we know better now that there's significant impact to that in terms of this development of resistance and potential toxicity of these medications and side effects. And so we know that we shouldn't be doing that. We've also quantified that it happens to a great deal. I mean, in the U.S., about 30 to 50% of all antibiotics are probably not necessary to be given because they're given for viral infections where it has no impact. In Ontario and in Canada, we've done other work that shows it's probably around 15 to 30%, but there's a lot of antibiotic prescriptions that are being prescribed and they're unnecessary.
When you say that viral infections don't require antibiotics, what are the differences between different kinds of infections and which do and don't?
Sure. Yeah, no, good question. So, I mean, the flu, or we call influenza, which usually causes fever, body aches, cough, is a example of a viral infection. Most upper respiratory infections basically mean runny nose, sinus congestion, coughing, are generally caused by viruses. So all of those groups of infections are usually self-limiting and resolve without antibiotics. Now, some of those will develop into more serious bacterial infections that might be pneumonia or sinusitis. But even still, sinusitis or ear infections generally get better on their own in about 70 to 80% of people. So it's not that all of these infections do not necessarily need antibiotics.
When you say 30 to 50% of them are given for viral infections and it has no impact, like, how does that happen? These are doctors prescribing these.
Yeah, there's a number of different explanations. So one of it may be that the diagnosis is uncertain. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor may think it probably is a viral illness, but they're not sure. Some of it comes from the perception that there's pressure from the patient, that they want something, they want to feel better, they feel like right. antibiotics will help. And sometimes there's that pressure on the doctor's side to prescribe these things, you know, and there's just doctor's habit. I think doctors have been in practice for many years also let's say they've always prescribed these antibiotics and their patients have always gotten better, which is expected because they have self-limiting illnesses. And so they are going to get better with or without the antibiotic, but it is a bit of self-reinforcing behavior that convinces the doctor that, well, this has always worked and perhaps the downside is minimal. And I think where we're hopefully trying to educate people is that downside is in fact not so small and it's accumulating over time.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Can you give me just a couple of like real world examples of occasions when someone might have in the past thought, oh, I need antibiotics for this, but in reality could have been fine without them and didn't need to do it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think probably the most typical example would be a patient that presents with coughing and, you know, the doctor diagnoses them with bronchitis. It's a very common diagnosis. It irritates the lung. The cough is very troublesome to a lot of patients. We know that over 90% of bronchitis is caused by viruses, though. But it's very common to prescribe antibiotics for that condition because the patients are very unwell. In the past, we often used to use antibiotics for this condition, but there's been many trials and studies over the last 10 to 20 years showing that it really offers minimal to no benefit. And so trying to change practice to the point where people realize that these are caused by viruses, patients are going to get better with or without the antibiotics, it's challenging sometimes. And so that would be a classic example of where just antibiotics are frequently prescribed. And, you know, in Ontario, it's about 50% of patients with bronchitis. In studies in the U.S., they said about 80% of patients with bronchitis are getting antibiotics when really it should be, you know, 5 to 10% at the most.
That's a huge variance, though, even country to country. Is that like a matter of the medical culture?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons for that. You can look across the globe. So, you know, the U.S. uses a lot more antibiotics than we do in most parts of Canada. There are parts of Canada that use a lot more.
Really?
Like Newfoundland uses almost twice as many antibiotics as British Columbia. The Netherlands uses about half of the amount of antibiotics that we do in Canada. So there's a lot of variability related to a variety of reasons, medical practice, expectations from the population, and a variety of other things.
But now that I understand this better, that doesn't actually impact the resistance of the bacteria because it's not the people who are becoming resistant to antibiotics, it's the bug itself. So as long as we're using X amount of antibiotics across the world, these bugs are evolving.
So it's true to some degree that it's not a local problem at all.
Okay.
And as long as people are traveling, which they do in more and more numbers, this will continue to be an issue. And we see a lot of the resistant bacteria with resistant genes in them coming from people that travel to areas where this is much more common. And it is beyond just antibiotic use. We know that basic sanitation crowding and things like that are also a major player in
right.
terms of resistance. And so, for instance, countries like India have very high rates of resistance to some types of bacteria. And patients or people that travel to those parts of the world often will bring these bacteria back with them without any symptoms, and that can spread locally.
I want to get into a little bit of the potentially terrifying forward-looking discussion. What does this look like if this curve kind of continues unabated?
Yeah, I know, and absolutely. And there's been a number of studies that have tried to make projections about where are we going to be in 30 years from now if we do nothing. There was a recent one that came out a couple weeks ago in Canada that put Canadian numbers to it. A few years ago, there was a British group that also did similar types of modeling exercises. And I mean, the short summary of it is that it's going to be a big problem. We're going to see more people dying related to previously treatable infections. We're going to see huge economic impacts from lost productivity and other issues that are going to affect the economy directly related to this. So it's going to be a major issue, both for health and the economy.
Are we adequately preparing for a world in which our most traditional antibiotics don't really work anymore?
Definitely not. I think there's no way to actually prepare for that. I think, and think about it, right? Where people in, World War I, you'd get a bit of scratch on the battlefield. Those were often fatal scratches if you developed an infection because there was nothing to treat those bacterial infections. And I don't think we're going to go to that world necessarily. I don't think we'll ever end up where there's absolutely no options. But we are heading towards a time where it's going to be much more challenging than it is today. And I think organizations, policymakers, the public, I think everybody is realizing that this is an important issue and that we need to invest more and intervene more now to prevent this from happening. So I think there's definitely awareness to the issue, and I'm optimistic that we're going to make advances, but there's a lot of things that we still need to do in order to prevent these projections from coming true.
When you say invest more, where do we invest? You've mentioned less prescriptions. What else can be done?
Yeah, so there's a variety of different ways that we can improve this. So one is what we call antimicrobial stewardship, right? Stewarding antibiotics, making them, using them only when they're necessary, but using them when they're necessary. And I think that's an important aspect of this. Surveillance is key. We need to know not only how many antibiotics that we're using, but the types of resistance that we're seeing. And we don't have a great system actually currently to be able to do this. It needs to get better. Infection control is another term that we use, which tries to prevent the spread of resistant infections and resistant organisms between people. This is often in hospitals, but also elsewhere, I think, is an important part of preventing this spread. And investing in research to make sure that we're studying the best ways, the most efficient ways to do this in our healthcare system.
Is this something that we can fix, for lack of a better term, or are we just going to kind of constantly be running a race forever?
So, I can't say we will get to a point where we can sort of claim victory, put our flag up and say that this is over and we've won. I think it's an ongoing issue. Like I said, the development of resistance is a natural, almost inevitable consequence of using antibiotics. But we can absolutely, and we've demonstrated in multiple different types of studies, we can slow this down substantially by reducing the amount of antibiotic use and antibiotic exposure in humans in the environment. And so there are absolutely gains that we can make. We can slow this progress, this process. We can make progress in reversing this process to some degree as well. It'll never end, but we can absolutely be in a way better place than we are now and prevent it from getting much worse.
What would you do to reverse it?
So certain types, we know that once we stop using antibiotics to a certain degree, we see that not only does resistance stop getting worse, but in some species, we actually see it go down because we remove enough pressure from the environment and we see the bacteria go back to their older forms where they are susceptible to a lot of the different antibiotics. I mean, to take you back to maybe some biology class that you did in high school.
Oh, God.
To when you when organisms mutate to change their genes, they usually sacrifice something. And they're often better off before they made that mutation, but it was a matter of survival. And we do see that with bacteria. When they mutate, develop resistance, they usually lose something. And in fact, they're often weaker. They're less able to survive or cause other problems or infections, but because they've sacrificed some of those genetic traits for other genetic traits that confer resistance. So it's a bit of a balance, but we can see that the bacteria may choose over time through natural selection to decrease their resistance for a variety of reasons.
That sounds like such a comprehensive plan to execute when you're talking about things that are done on such a personal level, right, between a patient and a physician? Like, how would you go about executing a strategy like that?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head that it's complicated. I mean, it needs national, provincial, and global coordination to do this. So there are lots of things in the works. So most countries are developing antimicrobial resistance action plans that healthcare systems should be implementing over the coming years. There's global efforts to do this through the World Health Organization and other healthcare bodies around the world. So it's not a one-off thing, but it is a global network of groups that need to be engaged and to make things happen and improve things.
Just thinking about where this is going ever freak you out?
You know, it's what I do and think about on a day-to-day basis. So, I mean, it does motivate me, right? I mean, I'm an infectious disease physician. I see it every day, mm-hmm. right? I have patients that have harder to treat infections or that die because we were unable to treat their infection because of resistance. I mean, I see it all the time in my work. And so, I mean, motivated on a day-to-day basis that to make this better. I can't say it's overwhelming to me because I think about it all the time, but I think it's really important that other people are aware of the issues and, you know, how serious it will become, even if it doesn't impact most people on a day-to-day basis now.
You mentioned that when we make new antibiotics, they're often more toxic. Is there a wall, for lack of a better term, that we're going to hit there as we try to keep ahead of bacteria?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we hit that decades ago. So
really?
Yeah. I mean, when we, you know, after the introduction of penicillins and then for the next, you know, several decades, there was a real boom in terms of the different types of antibiotics that were developed. I mean, a lot of these are naturally occurring products that were then reprocessed and developed into sort of coincidentally found that they would kill bacteria. And then that hit a real lull, that there's virtually been there's been minimal new classes of antibiotics. In the last few years, there's been development of new compounds and combinations of drugs that are effective against a lot of types of resistance. But these are often intravenous medications and, like I said, more complicated, more expensive to use, need to be used in hospitals. So it's not as straightforward as our older antibiotics, which we know are effective and much better tolerated.
Thanks very much for this.
Thank you.
Dr. Kevin Schwartz, infectious disease physician with Public Health Ontario. That was The Big Story. If you'd like more from us, including lots of terrifying stories about things that could kill us, you can go to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. And of course, every podcast player you could possibly imagine, from Apple to Google to Stitcher to Spotify to some random independent ones that we haven't found yet, we're still there. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.